Night gathers, and now my rewatch begins.
Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, the number one Game of Thrones podcast in the realm for people who party like Tyrion and slay like Daenerys, brought to you by Grandex Media. I am your host, Ross Bolin, at the Grandex Media Studios in Austin, Texas, with my co-host, Barrett Dudley.
Bow, 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 wow, wow. That's my hype horn.
That's him doing a hype horn.
Yeah.
With his mouth.
Yes. Don't get it confused. That was me doing a hype horn with my mouth.
Yeah.
Not
an actual hype
a button doing right. A hype horn.
Yeah, we don't have a DJ.
I'm just very, very good at doing the hype horn sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you for blessing us.
I did it for the fans.
Yeah. This is the Night's Rewatch.
We're doing one
podcast for every episode of Game of Thrones, starting with season one, episode one, leading up to the final season of our favorite show, so we can all be as prepared as possible. Take the black and join us. Every Monday, a new episode drops, right? That's the idea. We do one per week. Tell your neighbors, your friends, your family members, anybody who likes Game of Thrones to hop on this train with us and, you know, get super edumacated before season 8 drops next year. That's the idea.
And I mean, we're about to be at the final stop.
I'm scared.
The final stop. The train pulls over one more time in a few weeks.
It's a loot train.
And gets everybody on board for season 7.
Everybody gets massacred.
If there's a season that you have to rewatch, that's for sure the one.
Yeah. So here's the deal.
Tell your people, hey, Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, they're going to get you prepared. We're rewatching the most recent season.
Yes.
And then we're just going to do a whole bunch of shows where we do cool stuff.
Exactly.
Which will be very enjoyable.
Exactly.
For all parties involved.
We don't even know yet. That's how cool this stuff's going to be.
Yeah.
Figure it out. But yeah, seriously, few weeks left, right? This is 8. We got 9 and 10. 2 weeks. We'll be done completely with season 6, and then we'll be on to season 7. So start telling your people now. Get them on board for the Night's Rewatch. Have them take their vows. Do the whole song and dance. For the record, there is no song or dance. It's just words. There's no singing or dancing allowed at the wall. People don't know that.
You can do a song or a dance, but just not both at the same time.
Oh, that's the rule.
Right.
Separate.
Yes.
And not equal. Right. The Night's Rewatch is brought to you by our in-house clothing brand, Rowdy Gentleman. You can go to rowdygentleman.com to check out our entire fall 2018 collection, as well as we've been dropping new tees every week. New items coming out, and you can use Sumai, invoke Sumai at checkout for 15% off your entire order.
Hot bread, Zeke.
Yeah, so just fill up that cart. We got all kinds of new funny t-shirts and great hats and fall wear in the fall 2018 collection with long sleeve tees as well. If you're a Bush Light or Bush Latte, as some of you may call them, or Natty Ice or beer fan, a lot of beer tees, Rolling Rock as well, Willie Nelson.
We got a really good one coming out on Wednesday for all you scoot boys and scoot girls out there.
Oh, people who ride scooters.
Yeah. If you're a scoot boy or a scoot girl, you're gonna like what's coming on Wednesday.
You don't have to call yourself that, just for the record. Just because Barrett calls you that, you don't have to call yourself that. I'm not a scoot boy or a scoot girl.
Have you ever scooted?
No.
You haven't scooted yet?
Not in the way that you want me to.
You gotta try one. You gotta try it.
I don't think I do.
Why?
I just don't think I have to. I choose not to. Our hotline number is 866-43-CLAMS. You can call with questions, clam fam corrections, takes, theories, whatever you want. We're not going to play any calls this episode because we want as much time as possible to break this one down for you. But the hotline is open and we do have a bunch of calls continuing to roll in. So 866-43-CLAMS. This episode of the Night's Rewatch is also brought to you by MeUndies. And as far as I knew, until recently, MeUndies was the underwear brand with the crazy fun prints, but I had never actually tried any on. And now I have several pairs, and oh my God, they are insanely comfortable. Seriously, the most comfortable boxer briefs I've ever had on, ever. They use a micromodal fabric, which is a full 3 times softer than regular cotton. It's going to blow your mind how soft these things are. This is the exact fabric that every good member of the Clam Fam deserves to have coddling their family jewels. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. You're going to love these undies, but if for some crazy reason you're not into them, MeUndies will do whatever they can to get you into the right pair. And if they can't, keep them. They'll refund you. So it really is truly a risk-free situation for you to try the best underwear ever.
I'm holding my brand new pair of MeUndies socks right now.
Are you?
That just came in. And oh boy, let me tell you what, I can tell how good these socks are.
Also micromodal.
They're very thick. They've got the thicker footbed, which I like.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
They're not too thin, so you're not going to be swimming around in your shoe.
They're comfier than a normal sock.
Yeah. They're just cushioned as hell. Probably good for the weather, just cooling down ever so slightly.
They're micromodal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is a no-brainer. We have a great offer for the Clam Fam. Any first-time purchasers on MeUndies will get 15% off and free shipping.
Actually, 15% the socks are combed cotton.
Are they really?
Yeah, combed cotton.
Oh, I got some micromodal socks.
Oh, wow.
You got ripped.
There's all sorts of stuff out there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 15% off your first pair, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go to MeUndies.com/dragon. That's MeUndies.com/dragon.
Dragon.
Let's get into it. Season 6, Episode 8. It's titled No One, written by Benioff and Weiss, directed by Mark Mylod. Here's the description. Jaime weighs his options. Cersei answers a request. Tyrion's plans bear fruit. Arya faces a new test. Hey, that one rhymes. I like when they rhyme. Those give me a little smile.
Rhyme
time. It's like a poem. Do you say poem?
No, I said rhyme time.
No, but do you say poem? Or do you say poem?
Please write me a poem.
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 Says poem.
I think I used to say poem.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. And then one day I figured out smart people say poem.
It's a poem.
Are you one of those crazy people that say crayon like crown?
That's our producer,
a
Dan.
Crown. A crown?
Crown.
Allow me to introduce him to you so you don't just think, where's that crazy voice coming from? Have I finally lost it? Am I schizophrenic? No, that's our producer, Dan. He's just going off the rails, speaking into a microphone. When he knows, better. I'm just kidding, Dan. What are you saying?
So, some of our interns in Texas used to say crayon like crown.
Crown? Crown? Yeah, I don't
like
know.
A
that's
crown.
That's not a thing.
Like Cersei's crown.
Crown. Yeah. I've heard this. I've met these crayon weirdos before that say it a different way, and that's just wrong. That's just wrong. That's incorrect.
I agree.
We start off back in Braavos with Lady Crane acting as Cersei doing the scene of her son Joffrey's death. And Lady Crane absolutely crushes it. But she's playing a weird, more loving version of Cersei than the real life one that we know.
Yeah, and she's added a few lines here.
Great lines. Yeah. Do you want to read them? Or do you have a note of them?
No. They're new because she's taken Arya's advice.
Oh, yes. You are referring to the fact that this is not the first time we've seen her do this scene.
Right.
And it's an amended version of it.
Yes.
From the first time.
She did change the script. She did flip it on him.
And that is because of Arya's advice. You're right. I did not even put that together.
No, she's got the lines in there about seeking vengeance being angry. And that's why the patrons are just more, you know, they're just more moved than they've ever been by Lady Crane's performance. They're brought to tears. She is such an effective and delightful actor.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's fantastic that you figured that out, because I didn't. All I noted was that she was more loving, and it's a different version of Cersei than the one we know up until the end when she says, "And now I seek vengeance on Sansa the whore and my brother the imp who killed his own king," which is clearly the point you're referring to, and that's where she added in the anger and the hatred and the wanting to kill whoever did this to her.
Indeed.
That Arya explained to her. Wow, look at us putting it together. It's called teamwork. So after receiving that standing ovation from the crowd, she again dominates. This was like her Oscar-winning moment. She goes backstage. She sits down. She pours some of her rum to celebrate. And then she hears something stirring behind some costumes. And she checks, and that's where she finds a repeatedly stabbed Arya, who's just, like, bleeding out. I don't know where. She had nowhere else to go, I guess. This is the only other person she knew.
Yeah, and she's, you know, most of the time when you save somebody's life, you might not ever get to cash in that favor. Or
right.
It might be a significant period of time before you do cash in that favor.
It's been like 8 hours.
On the other hand, is she just immediately cashing it in.
Holy shit, you're back.
Hey, she's remember, like, that time that I saved your life? Sweet. Now I need you to do the same.
Remember earlier this afternoon when we were talking and I saved your life? I'm going to need that favor returned.
Yes.
Yeah, it hasn't been long. So Lady Crane takes Arya in. She sews her up, which Arya, by the way, points out that Lady Crane is an incredibly effective nurse, great at sewing up wounds. Lady Crane explains why. She says, I'm a jealous woman. I've always liked bad men, and they've always liked me. She likes bad bitches. That's her fucking problem.
Yeah.
And she says, they'd come home, wherever home was that night, stinking of some whore's perfume, so we'd fight, and I'd put a hole in them. And then I'd feel terrible, so I'd patch them up. I got good at patching them up.
Lady Crane is just out here stabbing dudes.
Psycho girlfriend Lady Crane thinks it's cool to, quote, put a hole in them, quote, end quote, all of the quotes, just because of a fight.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's why somebody wanted her dead.
Yeah.
Maybe she did belong to have her face on the wall.
Maybe she murdered Bianca's dad or something because they got into a fight and she put a hole in him.
You can't just be out here stabbing your boyfriend.
What the hell, lady? Yeah, no, this really, I'm not, like, it's funny. It is. But really, look at this situation. Maybe Barrett's right. Maybe she killed one of Bianca's relatives who was a male who she was dating or having some kind of love affair with. And that's why Bianca wants her dead. We don't know the whole story here. This is bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying.
No, I know, like, but I like that theory.
Yeah. And I don't know if the writers kind of intended this for us to be like, oh, wait, maybe Lady Crane is, like, not that great? Or maybe were just like, this is a cool story, and what a spicy minx Lady Crane is.
I mean,
is.
What do we know about this woman?
You can't just be out here putting holes in other people. That's not cool.
Great actress, loves rum, stabs boyfriend she fights with, and then she sews them up. That's all we know.
Yeah.
Right? So, I'm just saying, there's a lot of questions to be asked here. Perhaps if Arya had dug a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Speaking of which, Arya asks what happened to Bianca, the chick with the great cans that tried to have Lady Crane killed by the faceless men. Did you see that Instagram we put up of the dude performing the Google search of actress who plays Sansa in the play or whatever so he could find her boobs?
Yeah.
Man, that made my day. I just wanted to share that with everybody. Our Instagram is at clamsandcockles. Excuse me. On Instagram. So anyway, she asks what happened to the chick with the great tits, and Lady Crane says, she'll have a hard time finding work as an actress after what I did to her face. Jeez, lady, what are you, a Bond villain?
Yeah.
This is sick.
She carved her up.
Damn. But you have to think, whatever she did to her face, at least she didn't do it to her tits.
She'll always have those.
She will. You know what? I'm coming up with this elaborate theory that ends with the actress with the great tits who played Sansa. She becomes that weirdo woman we see over on the other side of the world or whatever that has the mask on inexplicably. And she's seen one time talking to Jorah and then never talked to again.
Mm-hmm.
That's stupid. I'm just joking around. But, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. So, Lady Crane mentions that the company's going to be moving on to Pentos soon. Tries to convince Arya to come with them and replace Bianca, which I gotta say, it's not a great, like, job of selling the role. Hey, I just ruined the old actress who played Sansa's face. You want to play her? No, not really. Not in particular.
That could be awkward.
Yeah. So, that's her real-life sister.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she realized. I guess she doesn't. She has no idea, Lady Crane, who Sansa, or who Arya is.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. So, she goes so far as to say that she has a feeling Arya would be good at this sort of work, which is just like kind of giving a nod to her, you know, abilities as a faceless man or woman or whatever, acting and such. Arya explains that she can't, though, that Lady Crane would never be safe, not while the waif is looking for her. Or, you know, she doesn't call her the waif, but that's what we know her as. So Lady Crane asks where she'll go, and Arya's response is this: Essos is east, and Westeros is west, which I have never put together before. And what's west of Westeros? That's where all the maps stop. I'd like to see that. So Arya doesn't really give Lady Crane any information about, or us, about where she may go or what she kind of sees as happening next for her.
And do you think that this ever comes into play?
It felt too important to not matter at all.
Maybe she does eventually go west of Westeros.
Here's what I have trouble with. We get these moments in this episode in particular where you start to feel like for what people, you know, what Arya may be doing after this war is over. But we're already worried about having time just to get the war in 6 episodes. How in the sweet name of God are they going to just chunk in a 30-minute period so we can have a little moment with each of our favorite characters
and like
off
wrap
on
it
their,
all up? Yeah,
that's not going to happen.
No.
You get the feeling it's not, right?
So I get that feeling.
I have a hard time imagining a scene where it's Arya and she's standing on the edge of the map and she's like, "Well, we made it," and she's talking to, you know, I guess Bran. I don't know. Anyway, point being.
No, I'm with you. I'll be real. If Game of Thrones season 8 finishes and I'm like not left wanting, if I'm just like, oh my God, and like there's not like 40, 30, 35% of me that's like, well, what the hell?
How
about
is it
this?
Over?
Right. What about this? What about this? What'd you do with her? How about this? I'll be shocked.
Yeah, that's not
possible. It's probably going to be the latter.
I think that's just something
that we all have to reconcile and deal with.
And it's probably time to start that process if you haven't already. I started in like 2014.
Yeah, like when the last season came out.
Mm-hmm. So Lady Crane gives some milk of the poppy to Arya, who she doesn't want it. She's like adamant about not taking it at first. But then Lady Crane's like, well, you need to sleep. Sleep's the only way you'll heal. And she's like, okay, give me that heroin, lady. Very easily convinced.
I got a question for you here. Okay, let's throw it back to ancient times before this podcast existed.
Yes.
Some 10,000 years ago.
Yes.
There were some names being floated around for this podcast that were not Oysters, Clams, and Cockles.
Oh, yeah.
Well, didn't one of them revolve around Milk of the Poppy?
I think so.
I can't remember what it was exactly, though,
but we were making Milk of the Poppy jokes.
It might have just been Milk of the Poppy.
It might have been.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
And then we were like, well, that'll just put people to sleep.
Ah.
And somehow we were like, well, seafood. People love seafood and shellfish. Who knows? Yeah, I mean, no one will ever truly be able to figure out how we... Because the thing is, this shouldn't be the name of the show. Oysters, Clams, and Cockles is a terrible name for a podcast.
Oh, I think it's a great name
for a
podcast.
It's too complicated. There's punctuation everywhere. It's tough to search in a search bar.
Eh.
It's the best name of any show ever. It is. It truly is. It doesn't matter that it's like... I'm just saying, if you went to iTunes and you were like, what should we name our Game of Thrones show? This is the last thing they would suggest. But it's what we went with, and it fucking worked.
Yeah,
suck it,
did.
iTunes.
Did.
Anyway, she gives her the heroin. She goes to sleep. Oh, she also makes a joke. Trust me, if my soup didn't kill you, nothing will. She can't cook.
That's a real zinger right
there.
Yeah, that's what I call
that.
A zinger.
Yeah, stick to the actressing, the serious actressing. No more jokes for you. Then next off, we're off to wherever the Hound is. I'm still not clear on where the Hound is, and I looked into this a little bit, and I don't think you're supposed to be.
He's just out there.
He's just in a hilly area. And the scene starts off with 4 soldiers around a campfire. There's 2 younger soldiers and 2 older. Long story short, one of the older ones fools one of the younger ones into thinking he's going to teach him some kissing technique, but really he's just trying to jam his middle finger up the dude's ass. You know, it's just typical soldier shit.
Right, right.
This is just guys being dudes.
Guys being dudes.
It's for those of you who didn't grow up men or males playing sports, this is what we do. We stick our fingers up each other's asses. This is a weird scene. This is not normal, okay?
Can you clarify that that's not what we do?
It's not what we do.
Yeah.
The Hound walks up. It's kind of great. You see him coming up in the background behind the guy who just got a finger jammed up his ass. He cuts that dude's head clean off, axes his friend in the chest, slits one of the old dude's throats. Then the final old dude, he axes upwards into the groin area, into the bum fingerer's crotch, if you will.
Yeah. Whereupon the axe goes so far up that all of his guts spill out.
Like all of his guts. The Hound says, "Where's the other one? The one with the yellow cloak?" And the man says, "Fuck you." And the Hound says, "Those are your last words? Fuck you? Come on, you can do better." And the man goes, "Cunt." And he says, "You're shit at
You're
dying,
shit
you know that."
Dying.
And then plants his axe firmly in that
Dude,
man's
yeah.
skull.
God, Jesus Christ, Hound.
This was
Man, you really went off here.
One of the gnarliest scenes. This is what for those of you who watch Archer, this is a rampage. Right here is what he goes on. And, man, it's pretty awesome. In fact, it makes you wonder, why doesn't the Hound just fight with a regular-ass wood-chopping axe all
Snacks
of the time?
All the time?
Man, he's effective with that thing. Woo. Fire. Back in Meereen, Varys and Tyrion are walking along. They're actually walking Varys over to the docks so that he can go on some expedition, as we find out. And they pass a very pretty black-red priestess. And I should be clear, she's black. That's her race. She is a red priestess by profession. She's speaking the praises of Daenerys Targaryen to the masses, and Tyrion notes that his gambit paid off.
So, it's trivia time here. I was blown away to see this actress here, because she is currently starring on This Is Us.
No shit, that's where I know her from.
This is Kevin's girlfriend right now,
wow.
Zoe. Yeah.
Wow.
Who I find very attractive.
She's incredibly hot.
And then, boom, here she is. She's a priestess on Game of Thrones.
You know what's funny is she looks a lot like oh, man. I'm not going to be able to do this justice, so I'm going to backpedal. The only reason I've seen this woman is because my wife watches This Is Us, a very, very emotional, sad, mostly depressing show with uplifting moments sprinkled in throughout to get you to keep coming back so that it can keep crushing your soul.
Indeed.
And that's, I've seen the last couple episodes, so I'm familiar with this black chick. And she's extremely hot.
Her name is Melanie LaBird. And as it turns out, okay, so here's what I was thinking. I was like, this is so weird that she had this bit part in Game of Thrones, because outside of Peter Dinklage, there are like no American actors on this show. And that's because she's not American, she's British. So shouts to Melanie, because she plays American super, super well. And This Is Us, very believable.
Very effective.
Yeah, the great, I thought great, she was, great American accent there.
I'm trying to remember. All right, so not Viola Davis. Forget it. I can't do it. I'm trying to think of the chick that I thought this was at first. She had a very famous TV show, very popular TV show. She's the main character of where she plays a lawyer, and she has a team of other lawyers like underneath
her. Oh, Kerry Washington.
Yes, I thought it was Kerry Washington.
She does kind of look like Kerry Washington.
Oh, thank
a little
you,
bit.
Man. That was going to fuck up my day if I
Scandal.
Didn't get that. Thank you, Scandal. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Tyrion did a great job, and there's priestesses telling everyone about Dany. That's all. That's it. Varys says they need friends in Westeros and they need ships. Both of those things we must assume he is looking to solve on his expedition. So he boards a ship, and our favorite buddy cop duo for the moment, anyway, Tyrion and Varys, is broken up. Over in King's Landing, Qyburn enters Cersei's chambers and informs her that several members of the Faith Militant have been permitted entry to the keep, to the Red Keep, and they're demanding to see Cersei. Cersei's a little confused by this. She's like, what do you mean? Like, who permitted them? And Qyburn doesn't respond, and she figures it out. She's like, fucking King let him in, didn't she? Didn't he, that little turd, my son? It turns out that is the case, Qyburn says. He's currently in his chambers at prayer. So Cersei exits her chambers and finds six-ish members of the Faith Militant waiting outside of her door in some kind of flying V formation. They're standing in a very funny formation, like a military formation, straight up already, like in the hall. It's just, they're just funny. And they're dressed like idiots. And they're led by Lancel. So Lancel informs Cersei that she's being commanded by the High Septon, the High Sparrow as we know him. He's referred repeatedly in this episode as the referred repeatedly to as the High Septon, which is confusing. For the record, that's the High Sparrow they're talking about, all right? He is in the position of High Septon, and apparently now everyone's comfortable enough to start saying High Septon instead of Sparrow.
His Holiness, High Septon, they've been very clear about giving him like a bunch of these new titles that basically promote his new level of power.
Yeah.
So people are calling him High Septon and Holiness and all this shit.
His High Holiness. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just supposed to be an indicator that, look, a lot of this is about power to that guy. That it's supposed to be a piece of evidence to that point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she has to come to the Sept of Baelor, give him an audience. Cersei refuses, obviously, and then the Faith Militant moves into action. So does the Mountain.
Stupid Lancel. Lancel just has such a punchable face. Fuck you, Lancel.
The worst part about okay, so Lancel goes, "Move aside, sir. Order your man to step aside, or there will be violence." And Cersei stands there, and she genuinely thinks about it for like 10 seconds, 15 seconds, and then she says, "I choose violence."
Yeah, and then she's
how
like,
"How come
my
Lancel?
Man.
Yeah,
my man. This man, you're talking to my man all wrong."
The Mountain.
If you talk to him again that, I'm gonna stab him in the face with a soldering iron.
What are you doing right now?
How did you derail this? To my Christopher Walken impression.
How is anyone gonna remember that? What?
The Clan fan will remember my Christopher Walken impression from like a month ago. They're gonna remember.
Oh, man, I hope they have better memories than me. So but the part about this that's annoying is Lancel's like, well, you better get this dude out of the way, or there's going to be violence. And then the second she says, I choose violence, some other guy gets his fucking head peeled off, and Lancel's like back in the corner, like, oh, did I say, I didn't say violence?
Because Lancel's a pussy.
He is. He's a giant puss.
I thought that this whole scene with, like, I choose violence and then the mountain ripping this dude's skeleton out of his body.
Yeah.
I thought this had, like, a more, like, badass feel to me than the Hound killing all those dudes.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. It did.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because, you know, I liked the... I don't love authority or authority figures.
Yeah,
or
so anybody telling me my business. Guys like this get
or
squished.
Anybody telling me my business.
Right.
So, like, you know, this was, and Lord knows, all the Clam fam out there knows I'm not a Cersei boy, but this was cool.
It was cool. The mountain choke slams this little dude and then pops his head off like you would pop the top off a giant tube filled with pogs.
And it, yeah, yeah, pogs, just like pogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like a little tube with a pre-rolled single joint in it.
Yeah.
Those are my two examples.
Yeah.
I was like, what if I popped a top on?
You, can of Pringles, baby.
There's a good one.
Once you pop, you can't stop.
That's true.
Everybody knows
mountain
that.
Could, though.
Everybody knows that.
He only needed one. Then he left. Anyway, the other guys all back down. Cersei says, please tell his high holiness he's always welcome to visit. I can't believe you tried to force a Christopher Walken impression into that segment somehow. Unbelievable.
Because Lancel says, tell your man. Like, that's just such a funny thing to say. Please tell your man to step aside.
If your man doesn't step aside, there will be violence.
Your man?
Oh, man. Lancel. Fucking turd.
And so then the man part.
Like. Yes, I see what... I just... It's unfortunate.
It's a brilliant segue is what it was.
It was. On the road with Rian and Pod, they're riding up the River Run where Pod proclaims, looks like a siege, m'lady. And Brienne sarcastically replies, you have a keen military mind, Pod. Note that I said military, not military. Military.
Military.
Which is how I will say it. For the remainder of my life. British people have that. It's just better.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better. Brienne sees Jaime in the distance and she gets like frozen up. So frozen up by seeing him that she doesn't fucking notice like a bunch of soldiers riding up to her in Pod. And she tells the soldiers, please tell Jaime Lannister that I've come to speak with him. I have his sword. Next thing we see is Pod hanging back, waiting for Brienne to finish up her convo with Jaime. And out of nowhere, someone sneaks up behind him and starts choking him out from behind. And guess what? It's fucking Bronn.
Do you remember in the previews for this episode, they really faked us out with this?
Knew it was horseshit.
They showed like Pod like getting himself in a, you know, in an armbar like that.
I swear you and I swear we called it the first time.
And I was like, oh shit, what's happening to Pod?
But I swear we called it. I remember being like, no fucking way.
Yeah.
That Pod dies.
Yeah. Somebody will have to go back and look at the tape.
Yep. Anyway, Bronn says, getting a bit old to be a squire, aren't we? Podrick fucking Payne, I thought you'd be dead by now. Here's some other great Bronn lines from this scene. He says, they in there? You think they're fucking? That reminded me of in Wedding Crashers when they meet on the stairs and he's like, is she still in the house?
Yeah.
That's what it was like. He's like, why not? I'd fuck her. You'd fuck her, wouldn't you? Well, he'd fuck her, that's for sure. And she'd fuck him, don't you think? The way she looks at him, the way all women look at him is frankly irritating. I preferred working with the little brother on that account. Come on, you're the one with the magic cock. You must have shown it to her by now. He just rambles on and on. There's like some Pod in between, but nobody cares what Pod says. It's all about Bronn. So Pod tells Bronn that Lady Brienne is training him for an hour every morning, an hour every night, which Bronn mocks, asking, then how come an old cunt like me can still sneak up and murder you? And Pod's like, that's a different kind of fighting. Bronn agrees and says he can teach him how to fight that way. So he pulls him to the side and says, all right, let's start with your footwork. Show me your stance. Now listen to me, Pod. You see how your feet are about a yard apart? And then he slaps the ever-living fuck out of Pod and says, lesson number one, assume everyone wants to hit you. Because they do, Pod. Everyone wants to hit a fucking squire. It's a fantastic little scene.
Mm.
Just for funsies. It's for us, the viewers.
Aye.
Doesn't progress the storyline in any way. Frankly, probably shouldn't be talked about on podcasts, but it's my favorite part of the whole episode. So then we get the scene with Brienne and Jaime talking. And they get into Sansa, how Brienne found her, how she fulfilled her oath to Catelyn Stark against all odds. Jaime says that he's shocked Sansa was even alive, saying that most girls like her don't make it very long. I thought this was very important. Brienne replies, I don't think you know many girls like her. It's making a point. Jaime doesn't know Sansa at all, and from face value, you would assume Sansa to be just like a lady, like a dainty little lady, princess flower that has no, you know, strength to her or self-will or whatever. Like, she would never survive a situation like this. But Sansa's not like that, and she's gotten a lot stronger through her experiences, and Brienne, who does know her on a personal level, obviously knows that. I just thought that was an important distinction about Sansa's character, whereas the rest of the world might not know that she has become as powerful and strong as she mm-hmm. has become, mm-hmm. right? Except for the people who are super close to her. So that could be to her advantage. So anyway, they have this back and forth, a great back and forth, where Brienne is very frank with Jaime about what she's there to do to get the Blackfish so that Sansa can utilize the Tully forces to retake her ancestral home, Winterfell. And Jaime is very frank with Brienne that he has been sent there to take back River Run from the Tully rebels, so you can see the conundrum. And after this substantial back and forth, Jaime has a great funny line. He says, "We shouldn't argue about politics," because it just shows like two people who actually really enjoy each other getting all worked up about these two things they disagree on or whatever. So Brienne has a solution. She says, "Look, take River Run without bloodshed. Just ride south again with your mission complete and your army intact. Allow me to enter River Run under a flag of truce. Let me try to persuade the Blackfish to give up the castle." And Jaime's like, "Why the hell would he give up his ancestral home?" And she says, "Because you're going to allow him to take the Tully forces safely north." So it's interesting because basically these two have come to a conclusion that I don't think... Did Cersei care one way or the other if the Tully forces were allowed to leave the castle? She just wants the castle. What's the situation
here? I mean, she didn't stipulate either way. She wasn't like, you have to kill all of the Tullys inside just the castle, too.
It seems kind
of
obvious, though, right? Like, you don't just let your enemy forces survive. Like, obviously the Tully forces are going to be used against the crown. It's just an interesting loophole. Because Jaime found a way to get what he wanted.
Right.
Which is to get the Blackfish out, to get the castle.
To get the castle.
And then be able to go back to his sister, who he wants to bone. And Brienne gets what she wants, too, I guess. Not really. She fails. But still, she gets to survive. And she gives him a way to do this without killing all the Tully men. It's a big win for Team Tully slash North slash Stark.
Boy, you'd think so.
Yeah. So, Jaime gives her until nightfall. Brienne tries to return his sword, which is Oathkeeper. She says he gave it to her for a purpose, and she achieved that purpose. But Jaime says, "It's yours. It will always be yours." And you kind of almost get the feeling like, could he be talking about his heart, too? Could he? I don't know. Brienne says, "One last thing, Sir Jaime. Should I fail to persuade the Blackfish to surrender, and if you attack the castle, honor compels me to fight for Sansa's kin." And Jaime says, "Of course it does." And she says, "To fight you." Jaime thinks about it for a second, and he's like, "Let's hope it doesn't come to that." Just a very weird moment. This whole situation's awkward as hell with these two. And it's like, this is one of those scenes that fuels the "what's the deal with Brienne and Jaime" talk, basically. So then Brienne meets with the Blackfish, who is like, "I don't know you. I haven't seen Sansa since she was a child. I don't know her signature. Why would I go off of this letter?" Tells her to fuck off, but she insists over and over. And finally, he's like, "Give me the damn thing." And he reads some of it, and he says, "She's exactly like her mother." But then he's like, "Look, I don't have enough men to help her take Winterfell." And he compares, just like she wants Winterfell home back because that's her home, this is his home, and he means to keep it. And if Jaime Lannister wants it, he can bloody well take it the way everyone else does, is what he says. So Brienne tells Pod to find a raven and send it to Sansa, telling her that she has failed on her mission to get the Blackfish to come peaceably to help her, right? Quickly, a word from our sponsor, Robinhood. This edition of the Night's Rewatch is brought to you by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They're striving to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. As a guy who has messed with a few different investment apps before, and I have always found myself too overwhelmed and confused to be productive, Robinhood has been huge for me. I've been able to dive right in, get the information I need to make educated investment decisions that put my money to work. And while other brokerage firms are going to charge up to $10 for every single trade you do, Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. You can trade stocks and keep all your profits.
I'll just say this. If you have ever wanted to just like play around with buying a few stocks here and there, just like dipping your toes into the market.
Dip them.
This makes it super, super easy and simple to do. It's a perfect app. I've used it for years, actually. And it's like, it's the only, just like you were saying, it's the only one where I just wasn't like immediately overwhelmed by like, oh, well, then you'll pay this fee and then brokerage terms and then blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, nah, you just put in some money and you buy, and you're buying stocks.
Just give me the stocks. Yeah. So you learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You can discover new stocks and track favorite companies with a personalized news feed. They have easy to understand charts and market data. You can place a trade with just four taps of your smartphone, which speaks to what Barrett's talking about. This is the most simplified version of this whole investing application situation that exists. It's the best. You can get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. And Clam Fam, because Robinhood loves you, they're giving you a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint.
Ooh, mamacita.
To help you build your portfolio, all you have to do is go sign up at oysters.com or .robinhood.com. That's oysters.robinhood.com, right? Oysters as in oysters, clams, and cockles, .robinhood.com. Back in King's Landing, Cersei enters the Red Keep with the Mountain and Qyburn, and it's filled with people already, none of whom Cersei even looks at as she approaches the throne. She kind of got her eyes to the floor, and then she's met by Uncle Kevin Lannister, who is a prick, as always. Won't let her stand by her son and tells her, your place is in the gallery with the other ladies of the court. So Kevin Lannister, still in King's Landing. That's really something.
Kevon.
Kevin with an A.
Kevin with an A.
Yeah. And they're really the only... I mean, like, Kevon Lannister's fine and all. It's just every time I see him, I'm just reminded of how close and adjacent we are to the long-lost and forgotten Tanner Lannister storyline.
He's out there somewhere.
And we're so close to it. Give us a little taste, guys.
Could we just get a glimpse?
Yeah, just a glimpse. Just see what our boy's up to.
God. Good old Tan Lan.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows which rehab he's currently in.
Yeah, yeah, but I bet he's having a good ass time.
Essos, Westeros, across the narrow sea.
Something west of Westeros. Who knows?
The edge of the map.
Edge of the map.
Great rehab out there, I've heard. You know?
That's what's out there. That's where all the rehabs are. Arya just doesn't know that.
It's the Arizona of of this world.
That's what people say.
Uh-huh. So Cersei takes her spot in the gallery as Maester Pycelle, the creepy one that pretends to be elderly when he's actually not like as elderly as he is anyway. We see this image of him. He's up there like pouring words into Tommen's ear, right? So he's still very much this. The point is, Tommen is now completely under the control of other people, whether it's Pycelle, Uncle Kevin, the High Septon / Sparrow. Tommen is no longer in any way, shape, or form really Cersei's son anymore at this point. He's been completely taken away from her. And he takes his seat, makes his announcement after making his 1,000,000th reference to the faith and the crown and how they're the two pillars that hold the world up or whatever the fuck. It's like he's required to say that at the beginning of every speech. And then he announces some big announcements here. So pay attention. He doesn't say that. I do. Now I'll say what he said. After conferring with His High Holiness, the High Septon, we have determined that Loras Tyrell and Cersei Lannister's trial will be held in the Great Sept of Baelor on the first day of the Festival of the Mother. And that feels like a kick in the tits because it feels like he just announced that the trial's on Mother's Day, which is fucked up because that's his mother.
I did not think about that. Yes.
Then he continues, furthermore, after much prayer and reflection, the crown has decided that from this day forward, trial by combat will be forbidden throughout the Seven Kingdoms. The tradition is a brutish one, a scheme devised by corrupt rulers in order to avoid true judgment from the gods.
Wow, he really did it to him.
Cersei Lannister and Loras Tyrell will stand trial before seven septons as it was in the earliest days of the faith. Seven blessings to all. Tommen out. He didn't say that last part.
Now, to be fair, he's right on the money about what a trial by combat is. It was definitely a way for the rich and the powerful to be like, nah.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely
correct.
Here's
my man. Let me present to you my ginormous man.
Yeah, at one point...
And he'll fight your man, and my man will win, because he'll beat your man.
Yeah, at one point a rich guy convinced whoever the High Septon was at the time, listen, what the gods want is for me to be represented by this giant knight. They told me this, and the High Septon was like, I don't know about that. That all sounds very shady. He got paid a lot of money, then he went along with it, and boom, bang, trial by combat becomes a tradition. Yes, Tommen is correct. It's a loophole that rich people used, but these aren't Tommen's words, and we know that. This is the High Sparrow speaking through Tommen, and the High Sparrow probably put two and two together. Hey, Cersei's been walking around with a guy that's about five times the size of a normal guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I bet she'd utilize him in a trial by combat.
Well, and in fact, he already knows that earlier day, you know,
he peeled a human's head off.
One of his stooges
yeah.
got his cabeza taken.
It's almost like maybe the High Sparrow was poking and prodding a little bit to get a feel for what exactly the situation was with this guy that Cersei's always rolling around with.
Could be.
Now he knows. So, on his way out, Cersei kind of follows, not just with her eyes, but with her feet. She walks along where she is comparatively to Tommen, and she's begging, you know, not out loud, but begging him to look over, just to acknowledge her in some way, and he never does. He thinks about it, and you can tell he almost considers it, but he doesn't. And it makes you wonder, is this the moment, perhaps, that Cersei decided Tommen would have to be a casualty in her great plan to exact revenge on the High Sparrow?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it at a few different moments across this season
now. It keeps happening. Yeah.
Right. But I think what I could say is that if she hadn't given up on him yet, which it kind of feels like she was already there,
or at least
like,
on the edge,
like very much leaning towards that, this is certainly the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, this is pretty heartbreaking. Especially because of Tommen's age. It's like, you know, that's a very common age for you to have conflict with your mother anyway in your teens. But Tommen is such a sweet boy. It's like she was going to avoid all this. And then came the High Sparrow, and her relationship with this kid has just been completely destroyed. And so anyway, Qyburn approaches Cersei as her heart sinks. And he says, "Your Grace, that old rumor you told me about, my little birds investigated." Cersei says, "And? Is it just a rumor or something more?" And Qyburn says, "More. Much more." The rumor he investigated is obviously into whether or not there were large caches of wildfire around the capital, like in places like under the Sept of Baelor.
Yes.
And Qyburn found those caches of wildfire. And I think they might come into play in the coming weeks. Perhaps in the next 2 weeks.
It could. Really could.
Then in Meereen, Tyrion's thrown back some wine in celebration of settling the city of Meereen and giving it peace, and he tries to get Grey Worm and Missandei to drink with him. I feel like we've seen this scene three times, but Grey Worm says he doesn't drink because it's against the rules that, as Tyrion points out, were made by his former masters. He eventually gets them both to drink and talks about how one day after their queen has taken the Seven Kingdoms, Tyrion wants to have his own vineyard. He wants to make his own wine, and he wants to call it The Imp's Delight.
The Imp's Delight.
And only his close friends.
I can see it on the shelves of Whole Foods now.
Right? You kind of can, though.
Yeah.
And only his close friends would be allowed to drink it.
They've been making all sorts of Game of Thrones beers.
And wines.
Craft ales.
Mm-hmm.
Spicy meads. Cancel that mead.
Can't believe you just threw that out there. Nicely done.
And now they've got the Johnny Walker White.
I just
label.
Made the episode.
Cancel that mead. Dilly.
Now they've got the Johnny Walker White coming out just in time for holiday, Christmas gifts.
And it makes you wonder what the fee is for, like, because clearly they're Game of Thrones.
Licensing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like George R. R. Martin at HBO, none of these people are like, you know what? I think it's time for us to go into the mead market.
Right.
Someone's offering them, hey, look, we'll do this thing, we'll make it, we'll slap your logo on it, you take 70% or 30% or
when
whatever.
When are we seeing Imp's Delight Pinot Noir? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it seems like an oversight.
Yeah.
That we've got Johnny Walker before we've got the Imp's Delight.
Imp's Delight? Give me some Imp's Delight, baby.
You know what it might be? That the grapes are still fermenting?
Mm.
Perhaps the barrels haven't turned yet?
That's true.
It's not
That's
time true. For the Imp's Delight. Soon come, though.
Yeah, it's a 2017-18 vintage, and those are, you know, not quite
not quite ready
yet.
They're not ready yet.
Yeah.
They're just not ready. Then Tyrion wants to hear some jokes. And of course, Missandei and Grey Worm are like, we're terrible at jokes. So Tyrion has one to tell himself. He says, three lords walk into a tavern, a Stark, a Martell, and a Lannister. They order ale. But when the barkeep brings them over, each of them finds a fly in his cup. The Lannister, outraged, shoves the cup aside and demands another. The Martell plucks the fly out and swallows it whole. The Stark reaches into his cup, pulls out the fly and shouts, spit it out, you wee shit. Spit it out. And no one laughs. And Tyrion says, it's funnier in Westeros. The joke is that the Starks are alcoholics.
Cheap? Or that they're alcoholics. Oh, I thought it was that they're cheap.
Or alcoholics, or cheap, or both. Maybe they're cheap alcoholics.
Yeah, no, but this is a good... I'm almost glad that we had different interpretations here because I didn't really get it.
It's only good if you already know the Stark stereotypes, which you would only know is if you were part of like the King's Landing squad.
I guess so.
And I think the stereotype is that the Northerners are all drunks.
Okay.
So they're like, they want the little bit of wine that the fly drank.
Yeah.
It's a bad joke, but it's also a good joke. Okay. Could also be that they're cheap. I don't know. Fuck, I don't know. Maybe it's both.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
Cancel that mead.
Grey Worm says, the Starks and the Lannisters, I thought these were enemies. And Tyrion's like, oh, God. Fuck, how do I explain this? But Missandei says, a joke is like a story, Togo Nudo. Hey, I'm sorry. Who the fuck is Togo Nudo?
Okay, I think that's Grey Worm in Valyrian.
Yo, you can't just be inserting other languages on a whim into the fucking subtitles.
But I think it's like a pet name. I think it's like the fact that she calls him Grey Worm, but in like their native tongue is
it,
like...
It means Grey Worm in Valyrian.
Valyrian, yeah.
But she's really showing off here.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's like their little thing, you know?
A joke is... It shows that they've become closer on the side than we were formerly aware of.
Yes.
She has a fucking pet name for the guy
indeed,
that we didn't even
indeed.
Know about.
Yeah.
She says, not a true story necessarily. Anyway, so Tyrion makes Missandei go next. And she says, two translators are in a sinking ship. The first says, do you know how to swim? The second says, no, but I can shout for help in 19 languages. Grey Worm says, that is the worst joke I have ever heard. Missandei is like, you don't even know what a joke is. He says, I am soldier all of my life. You think I never hear joke? And Tyrion's like, you lied to us. And he says, I make joke. And Missandei is very taken by this. She's drunk and horny for Grey Worm. Is my note. And she, more jokes, she exclaims. And so Tyrion like immediately pounces on that and he says, I once walked into a brothel with a honeycomb and a jackass. The madam says, and then God damn it, we're about to hear this fucking joke finally.
Honeycomb and the jackass.
Ah, the bell rings and the war is on and Tyrion and Missandei look out and they see all the ships sailing up to Meereen. Missandei announces, the masters have come for their property. This is not good. Then we're in Riverrun, where Jaime meets with Lord Edmure. Lord Edmure is the guy who got married at the Red Wedding, for those of you who are having trouble remembering, and he has not been seen since, to my knowledge. Well, actually, he's been used as a betting piece, or a, what do you call it? Like a negotiating piece the last couple episodes, right?
Yep.
The idiot Frey guys have threatened to cut his throat and all that. So anyway, Jaime apologizes for the way the Freys have treated him, says he'll be properly fed and bathed henceforth, and Jaime brings up that that Edmure had a son. He sired a son on his wedding night, which he points out is the son he's never met, born of a woman he hasn't seen since that night, their first night together. Holy shit. That's brutal details of this dude's life that we didn't know yet.
Yes, pretty rough stuff.
So that night at the Red Wedding, after they murdered his entire family, or almost his entire family, sans Blackfish and Sansa and a couple other people, they forced him to have sex with that chick, presumably while they watched and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He got her pregnant, and then they just locked him up in a dungeon. He's never seen her since. The chick actually had a kid. It also, this whole scene served as a rude awakening for people like me who didn't realize how long Edmure has been in captivity. So at least 9 months, bare minimum, you get the feeling it's been a couple years. He makes a reference even to how long he's been in chains and all that.
I think it's been a couple years.
It's been a couple years minimum, I think. And that's just, it's, last time we talked about something like this was Jaime. We were like, damn, we didn't realize how long he'd been in captivity with the Starks.
Right.
These are two men who have both spent a decent chunk of time in captivity together with their enemies or whatever. So, not together, but you know what I mean. So, Edmure and Jaime go back and forth for quite a while over like morality, Jaime's looks and golden armor, how Jaime lives with himself, and that's where we kind of hit a stopping point. Edmure's like, all of us have to believe that we're decent, don't we? You have to sleep at night. How do you tell yourself you're decent after everything you've done? So his argument is that morally, like, we can't, human beings can't sleep at night if you can't at least lie to yourself and convince yourself you're decent. So how the hell does Jaime do that? That's what he wants to know. And they go on and on, back and forth. But it ends with Jaime saying, basically, the layers are peeled away from Jaime Lannister here. And what we end up with is a quote that he gave us in season 1, episode 1, where he says, the things we do for love. And he makes a threat to Edmure. He says, I'll send for your baby boy and I'll launch him into Riverrun with a catapult because you don't matter to me, Lord Edmure. Your son doesn't matter to me. The people in the castle don't matter to me. only Cersei. And if I have to slaughter every Tully who ever lived to get her back, that's what I'll do. So what you end up with here is if all of us, you're back and forth on the fence, who is Jaime? What is he, really good or bad? What is, you know, what does the end of his storyline look like? This is a really important piece to that when you're analyzing him as a whole and as a character. When put to the test, when questioned by somebody, even as he's putting up a front as a decent man and human, he's just recently had a conversation with arguably his best friend who knows him better than anything in the world, Brienne, better than anyone else aside from Cersei. But when put to the test and when he's got his feet to the fire and it's all peeled back, only Cersei. He'll kill anybody and everybody else to get back to Cersei.
Yeah, I mean, Jaime is our character on this show that also takes us through the most ups and downs, like, on his arc. Like, he's a roller coaster of good and evil, basically.
Yeah.
Kind, you know, averaging out into
somewhere
something
in
of a gray area, yeah. Somewhere in between, right?
It's a good point.
Because, and we see both sides in this very episode, even. Later, when he lets Brienne go and just waves at his friend.
Yep.
But here with Edmure, where he's like, I'll kill your family. I'll kill your little kid, basically, to get back to the person that I love.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of going into next season. Once that kind of like toxic, obsessive,
it's a cancer,
love,
Cersei,
like the cancer, yeah, is like removed, I think we hope that gives him,
finally,
know,
he'll break away, right?
Yeah,
and
like
be just good.
An opportunity to,
yeah,
really embrace like his truer nature, which probably does gravitate towards, if, like,
it certainly feels that way, right?
Some type of some point of honor, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, listen, this scene never meant anything to me before, so I kind of tried to pay closer attention and get to the heart of what it is, and that's what it is. It's all about Jaime. It's all about,
yeah,
what is it that he's going to get, you know, stick to at the end of the day.
And you got, you know, we probably talked about this a lot during season 3, I think it was, when Brienne and Jaime are on their,
yes,
journey together.
Yes.
But like, you got to put yourself in this dude's shoes too. Every single person on Westeros thinks that he's a shitty, scummy dude.
Which, and that's been his whole life.
Which gets in your head. Like, if everybody thinks you're a shit dude, you start thinking that you're a shit dude. And at the same time, it's like, what he did, what everybody always calls back to, he had to do.
It was the right thing to
do.
He made the good guy decision.
Nobody gives him credit for, like, offing this king that was literally about to burn thousands of innocent people alive.
Thank you, Barrett. Because that, if you don't consider that when you're considering these decisions that Jaime makes, then you're not being fair. And that is the whole point of his character, is that he has grown up his entire life with a reputation based upon the correct decision that was framed in the wrong light.
Yeah.
And that's what he's been living with ever since. And obviously other things have happened. It's very difficult. It's all hell. And, you know, we hope in season 8 that we see that come to the right side of things, but certainly there will be more conflict between,
yes,
the good and evil that are, you know, battling
for the
soul of Jaime Lannister, or whatever, however you want to put it. And the best example ever of Jaime's reputation preceding him was his conversation with the Blackfish.
Right.
He's like,
right,
why the fuck should I trust you? You stabbed your own king in the back. It comes up over and over in this episode, just to remind you that that's the real problem, at the root of it anyway. Anyway, so, push comes to shove, Edmure's like, fuck, well, I don't have a choice. Has to send him to convince the Blackfish to give up the castle. We see Edmure walking up to the gates. He demands entry. The Blackfish says, don't let him in, it's a trap. The Blackfish tries to explain to the Tully army that everything Edmure says is just words from the Kingslayer's mouth. They're not valid orders. But, you know, the Blackfish eventually, he doesn't want to fight his own men over the situation, basically gives up. And they lower the drawbridge. Edmure comes in. There's this weird moment where Edmure walks in and he's addressing like 5 or 6 guys, and then the Blackfish walks in the back, the very back of that group, and they clearly make eye contact, and then Edmure decides to not acknowledge him and walk off. I took that as Edmure had a decision to make right there. Either tell them to arrest his uncle or give him a few minutes and see if he can get away. And he chose the latter.
Yeah, that's probably, I didn't put that together, but I think now, thinking back on it, I think that's probably right. Because they do kind of emphasize that they, like,
they
share,
see
that,
each other.
Share that,
yes,
that look for,
and it's
for
like
a
the Blackfish was making his way back to Brienne right then, and he just happened to pass by where Edmure was walking in, and Edmure decided not to say anything. But Because as we know, in like 4 minutes, he's going to say, find the Blackfish, put him in irons, and hand him over to the Freys.
True.
Why the fuck wouldn't he have just said that right there?
Yep.
Because he was trying to let his uncle get the fuck out. So Edmure goes up top. He commands all the forces to lay down their arms, open the gates, and they do. And the Lannister forces and the Frey forces march in, and the siege is over. The Blackfish, meanwhile, sneaks Brienne and Pod down to a rowboat, some secret exit, and Brienne tries to convince the Blackfish to come, but he says he's run before at the Red Wedding, which I thought was an important distinction. Because with all that comes with this guy and all this talk of not running, you kind of start to get annoyed. You're like, dude, what's your deal? Just bail. This is why. He has a serious, serious, serious chip on his shoulder. He bailed from the wedding at which his entire fucking family got murdered.
Yeah, he is also living up to the reputation that Jaime told Brienne about, and that this dude is just like, incredibly stubborn.
Yeah.
To a point of, you know, just being
obnoxious.
Stupid.
Yeah. But that's the thing is,
he should leave. He should go.
That's the thing,
he should help his blood.
When you look back on the Red Wedding, it's like, what would possess this dude to run? He just doesn't seem like that would ever.
He was like outside taking a piss, and then he was like, oh my God, my family's being slaughtered.
I better
get out of here.
Yeah, he wasn't quick to run back.
I also just got shouts to, or anti-shouts to the soldier on the top of the wall who just is not getting it through his thick, dumb skull that this is a trap.
Yeah.
Like, what? Come on, dude. Why would they just let this guy back in the castle?
The actor who plays the Blackfish did such a good job of like demoralizing him and being condescending as he was explaining to him, like, you stupid fuck. He asked him, like, he's like, didn't he just come from the enemy being captured by them and held captive for two fucking years?
What are you thinking, my dude?
What do you think? They just let him come here for no reason?
The other guy's like, well, I don't know. I wasn't really thinking about it. It's like, you know, I don't know.
Anyway, so the Tullys, eventually they find the Blackfish's body, by the way. They go up and tell Jaime, we found the Blackfish, my lord. He died fighting, my lord. And by the way, Blackfish's last words that we ever see anyway. Go on, now. I haven't had a proper sword fight in years. I expect I'll make a damn fool of myself, he says to Brienne and Pod as he's like pushing them off in their boat. So, Tully soldiers march out of the castle. The Lannisters hoist up their colors and shit. By the way, the Tully soldiers forced to abandon their steel on their way out, which I thought was very interesting. I wonder if that comes into play. It's like now you have an army but no weapons was the situation. Jaime looks off the edge of the castle, as Barrett already touched on, sees Brienne and Pod rowing away. They make eye contact. He lifts his golden hand up and gives like an awkward wave. She waves back. Emotional music plays. Yada, yada. Then we're back in Meereen, where the good masters of Yung Kai and the wise masters of Astapor are catapulting the fuck out of the Great Pyramid. They're just raining fire down on this place. And inside, Tyrion and Missandei and Grey Worm are arguing. Grey Worm makes the point that he wants to hold the pyramid. He wants that to be the place they set up their defense, because that way they can wait for all these bad guys to come to them and then fight. But as he's sharing that plan, we get this sudden loud like boom on the roof above them. And then, you know, we can't really tell what's going on, but it's clearly, we find out, dragon steps. It's Drogon. He's stomping around up there, letting Dany off his back. And she ends up kind of charging into the room, a little frustrated, seemingly annoyed. And we see Drogon flying off in the background. The return of Dany out of nowhere. Here it is at the 11th hour as the city's getting fucking rocked. And she looks pissed. Rightfully so, probably.
Yeah.
Right. So.
And I mean, this is, and you know, Tyrion makes an unfortunate habit out of this type of thing.
Of feeling like he let her down?
Well, just of making bad calls, man.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's fucked up because it's like he's the backup quarterback, or you know, look at it this way. He's a reliever. They get the bases loaded, full count. They pull the starter and they throw Tyrion in, and it's like, clean it up, bitch.
Yeah.
It was a bad spot.
Right.
He was always in a bad spot. But that's just my...
Comes in with the bases loaded.
Sports analogy for
no
the day.
Outs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, full count.
All right.
So then we're on the road with the Hound, who's still stomping around looking for the last of the Brotherhood Without Banners that killed his friends, when guess who he runs into? Thoros of Myr and Beric Dondarrion hanging the three soldiers that initially came by Rhaes' camp demanding food and iron and shit. And Beric says they attacked a nearby sept and murdered the villagers. So the Hound is like, hey, samesies, same reason. That's why I'm looking for him. I thought this put a nice little bow on the whole Rey storyline. Basically, Rey was a septon that was given the task of building another church. He gathered his group, was going to do that, and this is how this all unfolded. I always got the hippie vibe, like, they're just out there trying to, like, make a con... No, this is part of the system of the Seven. The faith, the whole fucking faith militant deal, all that shit. This is one of those churches. Okay? Now, I don't know any more than that, but okay. I do know that. Yeah. All right. So the Hound says they killed a friend of his. That was obviously Rey. And somebody says, like, I didn't know you had any friends. He's like, that was it. I don't anymore. But obviously, Rey had a big effect on the Hound. That's the point. Sandor Clegane, pre-Rey, is a different guy than post-Rey. He had a big effect on him. And after a lot of back and forth and some tense moments, Beric decides the Hound can have one of these guys that's being hung. And the Hound demands two, and then he's given two. So he goes to swing his axe and kill him, and Thoros stops him and explains that they're not butchers, they hang guys. And the Hound says, hanging? All over in an instant. Where's the fun in that? And Thoros says, they die. And the Hound says, we all bloody die except this one here. And he motions over to Beric. Great joke.
Yeah, it's just weird to me that like they're like, okay, we'll give you two of them. And by that, they just mean you get to kick the stool.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool. Like, it's such a big deal. Who does that?
I mean, I guess it is technically like finishing the act.
Like, you are the one that is...
You're the executioner.
Executioner, yeah.
Yeah, so there's something to that, especially for these type of dudes.
Yeah, all right.
But you hear, I mean, he's like, come on, let me cut off one's hand. And they're like, no, goddammit. He's like, I'll just gut one of the two. The other one will just hang. They're like, no, dude, what?
Yeah.
But he does end up stealing the yellow-cloaked dude's boots while he's hanging. Which is disgusting and awesome. Then he has a meal with the Brotherhood. He makes a chicken joke. They try to convince him to join.
See, he does a callback. There's a callback right there to his love of chicken. Just like I did a callback today to my excellent Christopher Walken impression.
Now, the difference is the Hound with the chicken became an internet meme that almost the whole world knew.
Yeah, yeah.
You and Christopher Walken, that's a joke we made one time.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Loved it.
And I don't even remember what the context was the first time around. I hope it was better than the second time. I just don't know how we could have possibly... I can't remember how we got
there's
to that
no
point.
There's no way that on the first time it was as good of a segue as I made it this time. So let's just, you know, we can just rest easy with that
you
part.
Think we've peaked?
I mean, you know, I'm not saying that. From here.
As far as Christopher Walken jokes go, I think we've reached the top of the mountain.
I don't know. If you're going to go Christopher Walken speech... in regards to the Lannisters, I'm surprised you didn't go with the lion speech.
What do you mean?
The only one that I know is the one is that piece of his line from Joe Dirt.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Pulp Fiction one's great.
Yeah, I can't do the Pulp Fiction one.
The Watch.
There's a Christopher Walken speech. I forget what the movie's called, but it's about hustling on a pool table, and it's about sometimes the lion has to show the hyenas who he is.
Is it the one from True Romance?
Yes.
Maybe.
I think so.
I think it is too, yeah.
The other one I'm familiar with is, I need more cowbell.
From SNL, yes. Indeed.
Oh, is that what that's from?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Yeah. I lost my spot as a result of this Christopher Walken talk, which frankly, we all deserve.
We did, yeah. But we're right here, he takes the boots, he calls back the chicken.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and chicken. Then we're... you know, I think we're off. We're off to...
Oh, no. First, Thoros is like, we're a part of something bigger than ourselves. And Beric keeps getting brought back for a reason. And I, a failed drunken priest, I have this gift for a reason. And Beric says, cold winds are rising in the north. Which is a very good indicator that Beric and Thoros, maybe they don't know exactly what the situation is, but they know of it, right? They know that north is where the real war is. This is the real enemy. They got to go fight the White Walkers.
Beric has just the best timbre to his voice, man. He just sounds like Optimus Prime, and it's super tight.
And he has an eye patch,
yeah,
which is also dope.
I've looked up on Twitter here because I remember tweeting about it. It was about 6 weeks ago. It was after season 6, episode 2.
Christopher Walken
when
again?
I did my Christopher Walken impression. So that was, yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Just let it go, man.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
So that's if you want to go back and hear the first time around, compare and contrast.
Wow.
Then
what
go,
a gift.
Then there you go. Season 6, episode 2.
So Beric says, the winds are rising in the north. The Hound says, and you're going to stop them, while he takes his dick out to piss in the river, which for whatever reason we actually see on camera. And Beric says, good and bad, young and old. The things we're fighting will kill them all alike. You can still help a lot more than you've hurt, Clegane. It's not too late for you. Which echoes everything
Ray
was
saying. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. And that's the moment that the Hound becomes convinced to go along with Beric and Thoros, because they echo exactly what his good friend Ray said to them, right?
Which is also, yeah, yes.
Yeah. 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 So, to close out the episode, we go back to Marine. No. We go back to Braavos, even better, where Lady Crane continues to tend to Arya as she sleeps, resting, healing on her Lisa mattress. Which coincidentally, Lisa mattress is a sponsor of this show. And if you ever find yourself getting distracted or forgetting things or making mistakes at work, perhaps like Arya did, letting her guard down so that she'd be stabbed, you don't want that. Then a quality night's sleep can make all the difference. And the right mattress is the difference between resting and just laying down. The Lisa mattress is the product of more than 30 years of experience in mattress engineering, hundreds of hours of testing. It's comprised of 3 foam layers that provide cooling, pressure relief, body contouring, and support. So you never get too hot. Super, super comfy, made for all body shapes and sizes. And over 300,000 happy Lisa sleepers agree the Lisa mattress gives them the rest they need. You, Clam Fam, can get your Lisa mattress online at lisa.com/dragon with the promo code DRAGON and try it risk-free for 100 nights. It ships directly to your door in a convenient box with free shipping and free returns. Find the right mattress for you at lisa.com/dragon. Get the rest you need tonight. Save $160 off your Lisa mattress. Or $235 off the luxury Sapira mattress. Same company, by Lisa. It's called the Sapira. Combines the memory foam and more probably the spring technology you're probably more used to or familiar with. And it makes just the best damn luxury mattress in the world. Barrett and I both sleep on Sapiras by Lisa. Incredible.
I sleep so cool. I sleep so cool.
Oh, I sleep so cool.
Because I'm a hot sleeper and Lisa keeps me brisk.
I don't need the milk of the poppy. That's for sure, Barrett.
Damn sure.
I just need my Lisa mattress. My Sapira by Lisa. Go to lisa.com/dragon. LEESA.com/dragon.
Dragon.
Promo code dragon. So Arya's dreaming. Lady Crane goes into the other room, gets a stool. She steps up onto it to reach for some more medicine. It's almost like she's getting some more milk of the poppy, perhaps, or something else to help Arya with her fever. Who knows?
Maybe a little milk of the poppy for herself.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Mommy needs a little hit.
Yeah.
She turns around, and she sees a blonde guy, skinny with a shitty goatee. And then we hear a thud, and we see Arya wake up, and Arya walks out, and Lady Crane is dead in a heap on the floor. The stool has been kicked out from under her, and the waif is standing there. So clearly the waif was wearing that dude's face. Now, I know we discussed this.
Which, yeah, duh. Like, yeah. What a disguise. They just found, like, a dude that looked like the waif, and we're like, oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Look at this facial hair. Now, this woman looks like she was snapped in half in a horror film.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talked about this, how, like, damn, that was a really brutal death for, like, a 1 second of combat.
And but no scream.
What happened is she just kicked the stool out from underneath, right? But that stool is 8 inches tall, man. We're supposed to believe she just cracked in half.
So, yeah, I'm not sure.
This is like a weird death.
That's what it seems like, because all we do is like hear like a thud.
But we also see the waif's shadow moving around real quickly before
so
Arya
I
comes out.
I think she maybe just like kind of does like some like, I don't know.
Creepy
she's like
shit.
A ninja warrior.
Yeah, she goes over there and like folds her over in half real
something.
Quick just to creep Arya out.
Yeah,
something like that. This was fucking weird. So Arya goes out there, sees this. The waif says, if you'd have done your job, she would have died painlessly. Instead, the many-faced god was promised a name. He must always receive what is his. You can't change that. I can't change that. No one can. And now he's been promised another name. And the fucking chase is on. And can I just point out the irony of this dumb bitch trying to teach Arya that if she'd just done her job, the woman would have died painlessly, and then she goes on to not just do her job? Like, already has started to have that problem, and she can take, like, she's, Jockin said, make sure she dies painlessly.
Yeah.
The waif stabbed Arya repeatedly in the bottom of her gut. Yep. That's clearly not an effort at getting anyone to die painlessly. And then she's still out here trying to teach lessons. I just am not okay with this chick. I'm ready for her to go.
Yeah. And then I just need to... I know we talked about this last go round, but the waif just straight up steals the Terminator 2...
T-1000
robot run.
It's fucked up.
Like, just like Swagger Jacks the hell out of it.
But... you have to respect that move because most of the kids or people under a certain age watching, they never saw the T-1000. They don't give a fuck.
But yeah, she like does that little tight little core run. And
yes, it's the choppy hands.
Next to the body.
Very robotic. Yeah, it's very robotic run. Very much T-1000.
Also, another shout to watching with subtitles, because if you did, then when they tumble down the stairs, you get to hear people say things like,
my basket! What about my basket?
My basket!
Oh, God damn it, another basket! Everybody's really upset about
their
basket.
Baskets. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
The subtitles are very funny there. And it's funny, because like people start bitching and saying, like, oh, my goddamn tomato basket, when she's still rolling through other baskets. And then somebody will be like, that one was my basket. It's incredible. Why is it that we both...
They were just like, I guess they told the extras, like, oh, and when she rolls down, you're very upset about all your fruit and the basket with which you were holding said fruit.
I'd be pissed too.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's just really, really funny unintentionally.
Well, and it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's just like maybe they would have been like, oh, my apples, my tomatoes.
Every one of them.
Less concerned about the fruit and more concerned about their baskets.
Baskets are scarce. Fruit is everywhere. Baskets are scarce.
My basket.
God damn it, my basket. So the waif follows Arya like through the whole fucking, through a steam room, through a marketplace, down some stairs where there's, I put, comically large number of baskets filled with fruit that she tumbles through because she hits every single fucking one on the way down.
Her rolling down.
Every single one. It's over the top.
You'd think that she would have, I'm glad that they at least had her finally rolled to a stop halfway down the stairs.
Her inertia took her through like 40 bucket baskets.
You'd think that she would have stopped a little bit sooner than that maybe, but she's rolling. She's rolling.
Oh, my goddamn basket.
As Limp Bizkit said.
They took our baskets. Yeah, it's ridiculous. By the way, after she goes through like the 45th basket, she realizes that her wound has been reopened. She's like, oh, the stitches, they didn't survive the 40 baskets I just rolled through. She uses the last of her strength to crawl down to her dark little cave room place that she's found to stay, seemingly intentionally leaving a trail of blood so that the waif can follow her.
Yes, I've dubbed these very cleverly blood crumbs.
Hmm. Yes.
Instead of breadcrumbs, blood crumbs.
Hmm. Blood crumbs.
Nailed it.
And so the waif does follow her. And at this point, again, you should be realizing the waif is drawing all this out intentionally. If she had just done her job and killed Arya the way she was told to by Jaqen, all this would probably be over. But she doesn't. She walks into this the room. She's got her knife drawn. Arya picks up her head. And the waif closes the door behind her and says, it will all be over soon, on your knees or on your feet. So Arya stands up to her feet, picking up Needle with her as she goes, and the waif is like, come on, haven't we been through this already? That won't help you. Arya closes her eyes, slashes the top off of the candle that's in the room with her, and the room goes dark. And the next thing we see is Jaqen N'Ghar walking through the House of Black and White, and he sees a trail of blood, follows it to the wall of faces, and that's where he finds the waif's fresh face, with blood still like underneath the eyes and on the chin and shit, just pinned up there on the wall.
Mm.
And Arya comes up behind
him. She did. I mean, it almost looks like she did the thing that she did to...
Like stabbed her in the eyes and in the all up in the face and shit.
What's that dude's name?
Meryn Trant.
Meryn Trant, thank you.
Evil man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like she got stabbed in the eyeballs, though.
I mean, she certainly doesn't have eyes anymore. Arya says, you told her to kill me. And Jaqen's like, yes, but here you are. And there she is. And then Arya presses Needle to his chest, and he's like, finally, a girl is no one. And Arya says, a girl is Arya Stark of Winterfell, and I'm going home. And then Jaqen smirks and nods, and then just watches Arya walk out. And this is the part of the show where we have to fry Jaqen and his entire storyline. So if you're a huge fan of Jaqen, the House of Black and White, and everything that went on this season with him and Arya, you can go ahead and stop here. Because that's what we're going to do for about three more minutes, five more minutes, maybe. This is so awful. It's the ending. I finally figured it out. It's the ending that's the most upsetting thing about this entire storyline. This man, it's almost like, you know, the vibe I got from Jock in here was like a really sassy gay dude who's just being like put in a position where he's like, ooh, I like the fire in this one. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, I'm going to break the rules for her.
Yeah.
What the fuck is this?
So as soon as we cut end of episode, Arya says what she says. Jockin does his smirk and his nod.
And it's like, what were we doing here?
Yeah. My first note is that, okay, well, now I think that the waif was the test all along.
Like, that this was the inevitable end, was one of the two of them was going to be there. But then zero of them are there. Because the problem with the storyline, the biggest hole, is that Jockin ends up with zero apprentices and the House of Black and White loses as a whole.
Okay.
Like, the religion loses.
Okay. Yeah, I guess. But Arya, in a lot of respects, is a faceless man now.
This is the first time I've ever watched this scene and gotten the impression he doesn't have a choice. She's going to kill him.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, wow, finally a girl is no one. Hey, let me grab that badge for you. Here's your no one badge. You did it. You accomplished all of the things. Way to go, Arya. You graduated from the House of Black and White.
Yeah.
And he's got a fucking sword to his
That's
neck.
Right.
It's like, come on.
It is weird that he's like, finally a girl. You're right. That seems forced. That he's like, finally a girl is no one. It's like, what?
And she's like,
what?
It makes me think he, like, basically, when push came to shove and he had a sword to his chest, he folded everything he believed in and was trying to teach her. I don't know. This is still the impossible one that no one has ever explained adequately enough to get me to let it go. Because it's so fucking bad.
There's like... okay, so what I'm most looking forward to about George finishing the books is probably White Walker and Children of the Forest backstory.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like 1B.
Rectifying this storyline?
He's got to make up for this for the TV show here.
It's just to be clear, it's not even that it was that bad. Like, it's enjoyable, right? It's Game of Thrones.
Right.
It's the greatest made TV show ever. Even the shit storyline, this one, is enjoyable because it's so well done.
No, I'm with you.
But it just didn't make sense at the end of it all. Like, everything we've learned about the guy leads us to believe that no matter what, he sticks to the beliefs of this red god that he worships and the House of Black and White and whatever. But then when we find out the end of the story, it's like, oh, wait, he didn't even give a shit about any of that? Like, what's the deal here? He just lets his chick walk out? She just violated every possible rule in the book? Or was she supposed to do all this? And was this the test to see if she, you know? I don't know. It's frustrating. It is. And I was even more frustrated after this watch through for some reason. I think I'm done with watching the House of Black and White shit. I just need to stop, dude. I've seen it like 5 times through and I get more and more angry. Like,
yeah.
It pisses me off that we don't get the validation of a final fight between Arya and the Waif where Arya is competing. Every fucking fight we've seen between these two, the Waif pounds Arya to a pulp. And we never get the one where she wins. That's what left people with all these dumbass theories like, Arya didn't win. The Waif did and walked out wearing Arya's face, and the Waif is actually Arya henceforth. Like, that's the stupidest theory in the world. That's straight up idiotic. You can just let that go.
Yeah, if you DM'd me about some Arya Waif theories, I was waiting until now, but now I can't find them in my DMs because they like don't stay flagged after 30 days or something. So you can shoot me those theories again.
They're not this is not the Waif.
But no, it was less than, it was not like, it was not those weird ones about like, oh, Arya.
That the Waif actually beat Arya and walked out wearing her face.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Definitely not. Okay. That's stupid. But yeah, man, I don't know. I don't know.
It's just a weird one. It really just is.
That part, you know, I think, here's what I think I can say with close to certainty.
Okay.
I don't think Jockin wanted the Waif to get Arya.
I don't either. I think this was the result he wanted. I just don't, the way he tried to make sense of it to her, it's the finally a girl is no one line. Like, that's the part where I'm like, wait, what?
Well, right. So is it possible that that line is actually a truthful line?
Maybe.
Like you got the waif. That was the final test.
That was it. You finally a no one.
Like you beat a you, and you, I sent an assassin out for you, and you beat the assassin, and that's how you do this. That's how you become.
Maybe, it's possible. It should have been more clear.
Yeah.
Regardless, but anyway, the most important line is Arya's. A girl is Arya Stark of Winterfell, and I'm going home. Right.
Yeah.
That gives us her direction. We'll be back next Monday to talk about the 9th episode of Season 6, Battle of the Bastards, written by Benioff and Weiss, directed by Miguel Sapochnik. One of the most famous episodes of the show. What are these called? The one before the final one?
Penultimate, baby.
Oh, my. The penultimate, #penultimate episode of Season 6, Battle of the Bastards. Tell your friends, your family members, your coworkers. Everybody should watch the Battle of the Bastards this week and tune into the podcast on Monday with us.
Yeah, start right now. Start with B.O.B., baby, Battle of the Bastards.
All-time great. Arguably the greatest.
Now, some say that what it really should have been was B.O.B., Battle of the Baskets.
Right.
Yeah, baskets of fruit.
And then it's just a field just covered in baskets, people rolling through
where them. And Jon Snow like comes out on the field and he's like, hey, you're talking to my baskets all wrong.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
It's time to wrap up.
Follow this podcast on Instagram at Oysters Clams Cockles. We're also on Twitter at Clams and Cockles. I wish I had a good walk-in so I could do it for the social media, but I don't. Facebook.com/OystersClamsCockles. You can follow me, Ross Bolin, at WR Bolin on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Barrett, where can the Clam Fam follow you?
You can follow my personal accounts at Barrett Dudley. You can listen to my podcast that meets at the intersection of style and pop culture. That's my new line. I'm saying it a lot. It's called Club Cool.
I like
it. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow that on Instagram at Club Cool Pod.
Maybe just, he doesn't do Christopher Walken impressions on that pod.
I do not do any Christopher Walken impressions on Club Cool. I reserve those exclusively for the delight and joy
of the Clam Fam.
Of the Clam Fam.
So if that was your biggest problem with this episode was the Christopher Walken jokes, maybe you'll love Club Cool because it's totally void of those. Go to grandxshop.com/OCC for Game of Thrones themed t-shirts and Oysters, Clams, and Cockles themed t-shirts. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review. Tell your friends, your family members, Battle of the Bastards next week. It's going to be huge. We'll be back Monday. Thank you for listening. Peace.